The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Sam Livingston, and I'll be your host for today's show. Thankful for the opportunity to sub in for Mr. Stephen Fleury. I'll be pre-recording this show one day in advance. I thought I would wait until Sunday rather than doing it on Friday in case there was any news that came up Saturday or maybe early this morning so that we could include that in today's show. Like I said, I'll be pre-recording this to be played Monday. That will be the Day of Atonement, and we'll cover some details on that day, the meaning of it, a little bit later in the show. And then in the second half of today's show, I'll play a Key of David program from Mr. Gerald Fleury from, I believe it's 2013. It's titled The Prince of the Power of the Air. Well, just to get into today's show, I'd like to start with really an atonement message, talking about Satan the devil, covering this and thinking of this being Satan's world. Mr. Stephen Fleury has covered that, I would say, extensively on the shows the last 2 weeks, and especially in the Key of David programs over here, that the totality of this world belongs to the devil. And obviously, the kingdom of God is when Christ takes over this kingdom. This is a quote from Lesson 33 of the Bible Correspondence Course. The fifth annual Sabbath, the Day of Atonement, pictures the fifth step in God's master plan, deposing Satan from his position as world ruler and removing him to a place completely away from mankind. We are so close to this time. We are so close to the fulfillment of this day. And what a relief it will be when Satan is no longer broadcasting. And how do we know that we are so close to this day? Well, look at world events. Look at exactly what the Bible tells you to look for. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1 says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." The last days. "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God." And then you can skip down to verse 13. It says, "But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." Do you see these characteristics? Do you see these qualities in this world getting worse? These are the last days. One of those traits that I've been thinking about a lot lately is without natural affection. I mean, look at the lack of common sense that we see in this world. Look at the way little children are being treated in this world. I saw a story a few weeks ago. I don't want to talk a lot about face masks of this little, it was I think a 14-month-old baby, maybe a little older, being forced to wear a mask on an airplane. And the baby is screaming and crying. Eventually, they kicked the family off of the flight and they canceled the flight. And just the natural affection for a 14-month-old child having to wear a cloth over its mouth. Anyway, you just see these characteristics of 2 Timothy 3 getting worse and worse. Revelation 12 and verse 12, this is the context I would like you to remember everything for, and or just in general when you watch world events today. Revelation 12 and verse 12, "Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the great inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." That rage, that wrath is intensifying. Look at those qualities in 2 Timothy 3. They are intensifying. And it's getting so much so to the point that you're just seeing this blanket, for lack of a better phrase, the mask is off. You know, the rage is there, and there is violence in the streets in the United States. We'll cover this a little bit later in the program about the coup attempt against President Trump that started in 2016, continued really through the first 4 years of his presidency, the attempt to depose Donald Trump. That is exactly what it was. It was a coup attempt. It was lawyers, it was judges, it was dirty cops, it was dirty attorneys doing anything they could, making up rules, making up evidence, fabricating evidence, doing anything they could to take the president down. But now, look at where we are now. In 2020, we could see a violent coup. We could see a violent coup attempt. The mask is off. Ironically, it's the same movement that's forcing everybody to wear physical face masks. And the left, the Democrats, they're setting it up like, well, President Trump is going to be the one to use the military. He's going to be the one to use the army to hold on to his office. Of course, they're trying to blame him for everything. But look what the radical left is preparing you for. They're preparing you for violence. They have incited violence all this summer. They've used it as a threat. They have said if Joe Biden wins the presidency, that the violence will stop. A couple headlines here. This is from the New York Times. At Pentagon, fears grow that Trump will pull military into election unrest. Of course, like I said, they're blaming it on President Trump. But look what they're getting you ready for. Pentagon officials fear that the president might use them in the election. A few more of these headlines. These are from Key of David program that Mr. Stephen Fleury taped over here. I'll just steal a few of these. This program airs in a couple of weeks. The left secretly preps for MAGA violence after Election Day. That's from the Daily Beast. Is Trump planning a coup d'etat? That's from The Nation. Is America in the early stages of armed insurgency? That's from Slate. And then The Washington Post. The election will likely spark violence and a constitutional crisis. Look at the intensity of that rage, that it's gone beyond just the paperwork. It's gone beyond the legal persecution that Obama put President Trump through in 2016. And we are now being braced for a violent, if need be, overthrow. A few stories from over the weekend. On Saturday, President Trump announced his nominee for the Supreme Court. This wasn't a surprise to anyone. I think it was pretty strongly hinted at, maybe even the day after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. But he announced the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett. And Democrats are in a bit of a quandary here because they obviously want to attack any and all things Trump. But if you go back to 2018, that Kavanaugh attack, that backfired on them. They lost four senators in that election later that year. And now they're looking at, well, what do we do? This is a white woman, a mom of seven. I mean, if we start going after her, we risk losing all of these moderate voters. I mean, it's so sad that that's the only principle that they have is how will this affect us in the polls. But there are quite a few of them that don't even care about that. They will attack this woman. They will make up any ludicrous stories that they can. A couple of the ones that I read, it's just getting so, well, petty isn't the right word. It is evil. It's incredibly evil now what they will do to people that disagree with them. They will attack anyone. They'll attack you for anything if you don't agree with them. They are the most intolerant people on this planet. Amy Barrett, she has seven children. Two of them are adopted from Haiti. And that seems to be right now the center of the attacks on her. This is from an editor at The Atlantic. Some white colonizers adopted black children. They civilize these savage children in the superior ways of white people, while using them as props in their lifelong pictures of denial, while cutting the biological parents of these children out of the picture of humanity. So apparently, Barrett is a white colonizer that went and stole these children from their parents and is now using them as political props. This is a historian that's commented on CNN, MSNBC, all the other networks. Many authoritarians seized children of color for adoption by white Christians. Nazis took Aryan-looking Poles from German families. Trump takes migrant kids for adoption by evangelicals. This is from a Democrat organizer. As an adoptee, I need to know more about the circumstances of how Amy Barrett came to adopt her children and the treatment of them since. Transracial adoption is fraught with trauma and potential for harm, and everything I see here is deeply concerning. Just make it up. Just make it up, really. That's all he's doing. There's nothing that he's seen that would indicate she... I mean, he's insinuating here that she is abusive, and the treatment of those children, fraught with trauma and potential harm. I don't know all of the details about it. I don't like wasting time looking into these accusations because they just pull them out of a hat. But I'm pretty sure she adopted those two children after the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. And 250,000 people died in that earthquake. Are we just to assume those children's parents weren't some of the dead? That these... Amy Barrett just went down there and took these children away from their biological parents so she could use them as props. It's so ridiculous what the left will do. I have a hard time seeing that Democrat senators at the hearing would bring this up, but Kavanaugh happened in 2018. We were going through a man's yearbook from 1983, and nothing to do with law. Nothing to do with the court system, nothing to do with how you'd rule as a judge. Brett Kavanaugh had to sit there for hours on end as, I can't remember who it was, Senator Whitehouse from Delaware is going through his yearbook and every comment in that little yearbook. Could you explain this? 35 years ago, so-and-so wrote this abbreviation in your yearbook, and what does that mean? What a circus that was. Well, coming off of this, I'd like to comment a little bit on President Trump and the courts. Obviously, he's looking at now having a potential 6-3 conservative majority in the Supreme Court, and that, as we covered last week, is a massive development. What a transformation that has occurred in the United States courts since President Trump won. And like we covered last week, like Mr. Gerald Flurry has gone through in Amos 7, these are tremendous events that we should be watching. And we've covered this before in the show over the past few years, but one of the things that President Trump and the Republican-controlled Senate have been working overtime at the last 4 years has been approving hundreds of lower federal justices in the circuit courts and the appellate courts. This is from the Financial Times just a couple days ago. It says, but with the parties divided over new economic stimulus, Senate Republicans have continued instead with the quiet task that has preoccupied them for much of Donald Trump's presidency, placing young and reliably conservative judges on the federal courts. More than a dozen district judges have been installed into lifetime positions in September alone, part of Mr. Trump's near-record first-term tally of 217 judicial appointments. And that is, I think, understated there. It is the record. Jimmy Carter had the most, but that was when they were expanding the courts. So he just suddenly had all of these positions that needed to be filled. President Trump is coming into all of these open seats, and you just wonder how long in advance God was working all of this out, because as it happens, Mitch McConnell was leader of the Senate 2014 to 2016, blocked most of President Obama's appointments. I think he got two in the last 2 years of his presidency. And that left dozens and dozens and dozens of these open seats. And as soon as President Trump won, as soon as they got the Senate again, they were just flying them through. Financial Times writes, Mr. Trump's 4 years in office have allowed Republican lawmakers to dramatically reshape the U.S. judicial system by installing conservative judges at a pace almost unmatched in American history. 217 Supreme Court justices, federal circuit, and district judges nominated by Donald Trump, the fastest term rate of any president, except for Jimmy Carter, when the courts were being expanded. Today, almost a third of all active federal judges on the U.S. Appeals Court were appointed by Mr. Trump. The impact of Mr. Trump's appointments is being felt most keenly on these key appeals courts, which Republicans have prioritized. These randomly selected three-judge panels that determine the vast majority of appeals are now increasingly likely to have at least two conservative judges interpreting the law. So these judges, they're picked. This is the level just before going to the Supreme Court. This is the Circuit Appellate Court. And there's just a pool of 13 judges in this district. At least they pick three of them at random, and that's the court. And it says here that a third of those justices, I think this is talking just about the Ninth District, are now conservative. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers cases heard in California and other Western states, was once a liberal bastion. Under Mr. Trump, its previous 11-strong majority of Democrat-appointed judges has been whittled down to just three. So there's a higher likelihood that you'll get a conservative judge in the ninth district than you would have just 3 or 4 years ago. Continuing on from the Financial Times, 53 appeal court judges nominated by President Trump is also the fastest first-term rate of any president, again, except for Jimmy Carter. Almost a third of all active federal judges on the U.S. appeals courts were appointed by Trump. Elsewhere, Mr. Trump's appointees have bolstered Republican majorities on four of the 13 appeals courts and flipped three from majority Democrat appointed to majority Republican appointed. And this, again, will be something we have to pay close attention to coming up to the election, because it's not like there's a contest in some swing state and suddenly it's up to the Supreme Court. You have to go through the system. If you look at what happened in 2000, first it had to go through the state judicial system, and then that worked its way up to the Supreme Court of Florida. And then they can now get into the federal system and keep appealing that because it violates the federal voting rule, violated the Constitution. So that goes up to the Supreme Court. But in these cases, you're looking at these Democrat districts. Just take California for one example. And if there's fraud, okay, well, this could just get knocked down in these district courts. Now, of course, they'll be able to appeal it. But if there are too many cases, if it just keeps happening, and they're all going to the Supreme Court, and President Trump has the majority, and Chief Justice Roberts, he's a middleman. He just waffles between one end or the other, but he can just decide, we're not going to hear it. Let the district court ruling stand. And that's the end of it. And it might come down to that, where you have all of these Democrat states that would vote for Joe Biden anyway. And it doesn't matter what happens in those states. And then the Supreme Court will just hear the one or two that are really important. I mean, you could go through scenarios all day, but the fact that President Trump has worked so hard to get a lot of these low-rung justices appointed, again, establishes what Mr. Fleury was writing about 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago about Jeroboam and President Trump and working with these courts and having the court that works with him. Again, just amazing news to cover under the light of Bible prophecy. Seeing this dramatic shift where the United States, it was suffering that affliction, and then it's saved temporarily, and you have this massive switch throughout the United States judicial system. I wanted to cover some more news about the deep state. Mr. Fleury talked about those text messages that came out on Friday, and those FBI agents that ran out and got liability insurance because they were so unsure of what they were doing. They just did what they were told, but they knew it was wrong. They were worried about being sued. I mean, imagine that. Imagine these are police officers. That's essentially what they are. And they're being told by their higher ups, go investigate this man. And they're so uncomfortable about doing that, that if you had the evidence, if the evidence was overwhelming, you should be confident to go and do what they did. They were, I don't even use the word prosecuting. I use the word persecuting. Well, President Trump used that. It was a persecution. And you'd think if you're going to be that bold and that audacious, you'd have concrete evidence. But they were making it up as they went, as we'll cover here in just a few minutes. They called it a madhouse. They called it a scramble at the FBI. They were looking for evidence. As soon as Barack Obama decided to keep that investigation open, they said it was a scramble. It was a madhouse to find evidence. And they were so worried about it, they all got liability insurance. Imagine that happening to you. The dirty cops getting liability insurance so you couldn't sue them, so you couldn't sue the city if they made up a crime and persecuted you. I'll start this segment reading from Mr. Gerald Fleury's April 2018 Philadelphia Trumpet article. It's titled, Nunes Memo Exposes Unseen Threat to America. He says, we live in a dangerous time in world history. Events are particularly dangerous in America, Britain, and the Jewish state in the Middle East. The reality exposed by this memo, he's talking about the Nunes memo, which was about the Steele dossier, is much more dangerous than most people realize. Again, remember that context of Revelation 12:12. Yet even those with inside knowledge of the memo do not understand the full danger. An electrifying statement in Revelation 12 and verse 12 explains what is really going on. We must understand this truth. And again, that's about Satan being cast down and having great wrath because he knows that his time is short. Mr. Fleury writes, most people will heedlessly dismiss this warning. They do not consider the spiritual dimension to world events. This is why they fail to grasp their real significance. Revelation 12, verse 12, speaks of a time when Satan is wrathful because his time is short. We are in that time right now. The Nunes memo is evidence of just how active the devil is, particularly in his efforts to destroy America. And this was in 2018. Think of how much more we know about that dossier, how much more we know about the corruption in the FBI. President Trump has been calling it a hoax all along, and he's right, but it doesn't go far enough, and he gets it now. But this was a coordinated coup attempt. This was not just some fumbling around and so-and-so happened to find corroborating evidence, and this was a coup attempt, as Mr. Gerald Fleury writes. The media was not just falling around. They weren't just, innocent bystanders and they were just reporting what they were given. They were integral to this coup attempt. It could not happen without them. And if you don't have the spiritual aspect of this, you won't see the significance of it. This is from The Federalist. This is Sean Davis and Molly Hemingway. This is an FBI agent who was interviewed by someone on Durham's team. And this FBI's agent, the FBI agent's name is William Barnett. And he told the investigator, Durham's investigator, they recently released a summary of this interview that they had with Barnett. And he worked with Mueller. He worked with Peter Strzok. He worked under Comey. It says, according to the summary of Barnett's interview, he said there was never any basis for the bizarre collusion theory the agency and the special counsel relentlessly pursued, to the point that agents made jokes about how they could take any piece of information and claim it was evidence of collusion. He said the special counsel office pursued Michael Flynn simply as a means to get Trump and viewed the FBI investigators as a speed bump, slowing down the work of attorneys leading the investigation. A lot to unpackage in that interview, mainly why it took him 4 years to come forward and to say that. He says later in his interview, he was uncomfortable about doing these things, and he thought, well, if the higher-ups were saying it, that it would be okay. This agent, he was continually trying to slow this investigation down. He wanted it closed. He would get kicked out of meetings. He'd get kicked out of interviews. He says I'll just read this from the article. It was not the only time this case agent was cut out of the unusual activity going on in the probe to target Flynn. Barnett said neither he or other line agents were invited to attend one of these meetings about the Flynn investigation, which was changed to being conducted from the top down. So originally it would be the low rung agents. They get the evidence, they have the investigation going, and they report to the top. This one was being run from the top down, the seventh floor, and Comey and McCabe are not doing anything without checking that through the Oval Office, as those text messages we heard on Friday again reveal. All of these agents asked, how did that Obama meeting go? What did he say? Keep it open. Keep it open. We're going for it. There's a mad scramble now to find evidence. Barnett says the situation, or this is from the Federalist again, the situation was so extreme that Barnett and others joked about how it was like a game, which they referred to as collusion clue. In the hypothetical game, investigators are able to choose any character conducting any activity in any location and pair this individual with another character and interpret it as evidence of collusion, Barnett said. It's so much worse than we thought. They're laughing about it behind the scenes. Meanwhile, Michael Flynn sits in jail, has his family come under threat, loses his home, spends hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. He's being persecuted by these people who know that it's a game. Collusion, we've covered this before. It's not even a legal term. It's just pulled out of thin air, and it can be whatever you want it to be. And that was the basis of an investigation into American citizens, an illegal investigation. And it was being led, like Mr. Fleury said 2 or 3 years ago, before all those text messages came out, it was being led by Barack Obama. Even those, Mr. Fleury said, with inside knowledge of the Nunes memo, don't understand the full danger. This is an attack on the United States government. It was a coup attempt. The Washington Examiner says the news media's Steele dossier scandal is even worse than you thought. Andrew McCarthy, this was after we found out that Steele's subsource was actually investigated by Mueller's FBI because they believed he was a Russian spy 10 years ago. Andrew McCarthy says, see if you can follow this. In an effort to depict Donald Trump as if he were in an espionage conspiracy with the Kremlin, the Obama administration used bogus information from a man the FBI suspected was an actual Russian spy to brand as a suspected Russian spy. A former U.S. Naval Intelligence officer who had actually been a CIA informant. Carter Page helped the CIA. He gave them information. He helped them out. And then Steele comes along, and his source is a man the government actually investigated for being a Russian spy. And that Russian spy is accusing Carter Page of being a Russian spy. Can you keep up? The Wall Street Journal says it was worse than we thought. We're referring to the FBI's 2016 investigation into the Trump campaign. It was worse than you thought. It was worse than we thought. I've read 4 or 5 articles saying that. And even when you get those details, it will get worse and worse and worse. John Brennan, he's being investigated for politicizing intelligence. Surprise, surprise. He did that every day he worked for that administration. This is from Paul Sperry. Brennan, he took intelligence and he intentionally ignored the intelligence that reveals what we're finding out now, that the Russians were colluding with the Clinton campaign. He just left that out and put all the bad stuff in his report on President Trump and then pawned that off like, I think, remember the media at the time, he releases this report on January 6th, 17 federal investigative agencies confirmed this report to be true. Well, now we know, well, we knew at the time there aren't even 17. They didn't work together on it. As it turns out, John Brennan picked 5 people from the CIA. He handpicked them, and those are the people that created this report that really was just giving credit to the Steele dossier, making it look like the intelligence agencies had all verified it. Again, Mr. Fleury says, you or even those with inside knowledge don't understand the full danger. We're seeing the way the devil works. That's what these events are revealing. It's being exposed. You're seeing all of the lies. You're seeing the tactics. You're seeing the subtlety. You're seeing, you know, it was the angel of light. Barack Obama at that DNC speech, he's in a room with the Constitution plastered all over the wall. He quotes the Constitution. He acts like he loves it, but look at the fruits. You're seeing people that appear like an angel of light. They're subtle. They're charming. They quote the Constitution. But look at the fruits. Look at what is happening in this world. Well, like I said, we'll move into playing a Key of David from Mr. Gerald Fleury. This Key of David program is titled The Prince of the Power of the Air. It aired in October of 2013. And in this Key of David, he's responding to another mass shooting in the United States. And he talks about this spiritual force at play over the entire world, but it is especially targeting the United States, Britain, and the Jewish state. And I thought this would be a good program to play because, well, it's titled The Prince of the Power of the Air, and on Atonement, we will see this powerful force locked up, closed up, shut down. But we can't underestimate, again, how powerful that force is today and how he is filled with wrath. If you'd like to understand more about Atonement, I just recommend BCC Lesson 33, and you can request Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which that is all I have time for in this segment. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Mr. Fleury will be live with you tomorrow from Edmond, Oklahoma. If you have any feedback, you can send that to td@kpcg.fm. And now we'll transition into that Key of David program from Mr. Gerald Fleury titled The Prince of the Power of the Air.
Greetings, everyone. The recent mass murder in Washington, D.C., who killed 13 people, including himself, said that he was hearing voices. Hearing voices. He also said he was led to do it by radio waves, as he put it, and that's, if you really understand the meaning of that and tie it into a certain scripture, it is rather amazing what we can see. There is one scripture, though, in the New Testament that really does focus on understanding what the motive was in this mass shooting. There at the Naval headquarters in Washington, D.C. Now, if people believe their Bibles, really believe their Bibles and what their Bibles teach, they would have to be deeply disturbed by that event. And they would certainly have to be sobered by what the Bible has to say about it. But there is one scripture that really does focus on the motive behind what that man did, or what caused him to do it. What caused him to do that? And there's so much at stake here. Surely we need to understand. Nobody seems to understand why, or what we can do to solve such a problem. Almost nobody that even ventures a solution, it seems, unless it's very shallow. But you can understand this. If you look at almost all of these mass murders, almost every single one of them will tell you that they are hearing voices, and the voices that they hear are telling them to kill people, their fellow human beings. Now, that's what this is about. Those voices are telling them to do massive violence and murder. Where are those voices coming from? Surely we need to understand this better. And let me tell you, the Bible does give us that understanding. Notice Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Wherein in time past, that is, before they were converted, he's talking to converted people here, that is, Paul is, wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. It's working now. I want to give you, just to read a few statements here by Herbert W. Armstrong, who wrote in his booklet on human nature, Did God Create It? And if you would like to have a copy of it, we can't print that ourselves, but we can tell you where you can get a copy of it. And it's by Herbert W. Armstrong, and I want to read to you what he wrote in that booklet. Here, I'll quote him. Grasp it. Satan is here called the prince of the power of the air. I could not have understood that 60 years ago. I did not then realize how communication by sound and by picture can be broadcast instantaneously through the air. I have stressed the point that Satan, the former great archangel, Cherub Lucifer, was the most perfect and powerful being that God could create as an individual being. He was perfect as originally created. Perfect. But he is composed of spirit, and thus he is invisible to human eyes. This great and powerful being, even though evil, has power literally to surcharge the air around this earth. In other words, he broadcasts around this earth, just like the waves that go out for our television sets and our radios. It's very similar to that. Mr. Armstrong continued, wherever you are, as you read these words, chances are there are voices and perhaps music in the air around you, a radio or a television set tuned to the right wavelength. Now, this shooter said he was led to do this by radio waves, a certain pressure like a radio waves, and he was hearing voices. And they all say that, virtually. All of them say it. And that is something we really ought to understand if we want to solve some very serious problems that are going to get a lot worse if we don't solve them. Notice, Mr. Armstrong continued here, the spirit in every human being is automatically tuned in on Satan's wavelength. See, the shooter in the Naval Yard said he was led by radio waves. And Mr. Armstrong talks about being tuned to Satan's wavelength, and after all, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 says that Satan is the god of this world. He speaks to this world in many different ways. But he is a spirit being and you can't see him. Just like you can't see electricity. Mr. Armstrong continues, you don't hear anything because he does not broadcast in words nor in sounds, whether music or otherwise. He broadcasts in attitudes. He broadcasts in attitudes of self-centeredness, lust, greed, vanity, jealousy, envy, resentment, competition, strife, bitterness, and hate. Well, how about that? Here is a great being filled with hate. Filled with hate. God says he was filled, or that he was a murderer from the beginning. And he's the father of liars. He just lies all the time. But he was a murderer from the very beginning. He loves to commit murder. Now, is that Satan really real to this world? Does anybody really believe that? I don't see much evidence that they do. And then he goes on to talk about the air just being surcharged with that broadcasting, just like the broadcasting going out for this television program or for a radio station. That's what it's all about, and that's how Satan actually deceives the whole world. He's broadcasting all the time, and yet people scoff at the idea of a devil, and he has them totally deceived. So says your Bible, Revelation 12 and verse 9. Mr. Armstrong continued, "This prince of the power of the air, this god of this world, is the real source of what we have come to call human nature. Here is the real cause of all the world's evils. But it seems nobody understands it, and therefore the world does nothing about it except to go along with it, blaming human nature and supposing it was God who created us with an evil nature. Actually, it is Satan's nature." Now, that's really a bombshell understanding. If you just really think about it and study your Bible, and especially study to understand what this one verse means in particular. But Mr. Armstrong goes on to talk about how Satan works on people's moods, their attitudes, their negative feelings. That's how he broadcasts. If he can tap into your bad attitude or your bitter attitude or your hateful attitude, well, he really has a field to operate in. And that's how he commits murder and causes wars and riots. And you see the turmoil increasing in this world, and it's increasing for a very definite reason. Because he has been cast down to this earth and is now confined to the earth, whereas a few years ago he was not. Now it's very different. But this shooter said he was hearing voices. Well, they all say that. Shouldn't we really take them at their word and say, well, okay, if they're hearing voices, where do those voices come from? They don't come from some church choir, I would think. Would you? That is, people who are really trying to obey God. No, those voices are not audible, but they are speaking to people, whether it be about violence or just frankly transgressing God's laws, and especially His Ten Commandments. But almost every single one of those shooters says he hears voices. You can see that in that elementary school shooting in Connecticut, or the movie theater shooting in Colorado, or the congresswoman being shot and wounded and others killed in Arizona. All of those shooters said they heard voices, and voices telling them to do violence. Now, if they are hearing voices, why do they always have to be of such terrifying deeds that these voices want them to do? Well, all you have to do is understand Ephesians 2 and verse 2. I want to just read a little more to you here to add to this understanding. The Lang's commentary translates that the expression according to the prince of the power of the air. They translate it as powers, plural. In other words, they will tell you that and most other authorities say this is a collective noun. And here's what Lang's wrote: the atmosphere surrounding the earth, breathed by all, acting upon this world and the world of men, standing in many relations to and exerting great power and influence upon their life, hence the power which the prince controls, that is Satan controls, is brought into connecting with the air and is described by the air. Well, I'm going to show you in a moment that, well, yes, there's Satan and all these millions of demons that rebelled with him against God. So it really, I think, enhances the understanding here or broadens the understanding if we know that it is a collective noun. And here's what one authority, Lang's quoted, said, "The world is under the control of an active and powerful master," thus characterized, from a guy by the name of Edel. And he said the reference to a personality is to be found in this word, that is the power. As a collective noun, it includes the evil spirits whom follow the prince Satan. Now that's, again, Satan and the demons. Now you can see the Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary adds another little dimension to this by saying that when it talks about the power being collective, but it also says the spirit that are working in these men are also, that is also a collective noun. In other words, there are millions of demons confined to this earth only recently, and you're going to see a lot more of that if we don't learn a lesson here. It's about Satan and the demons, one third of them who rebelled against God, and I'll show you that from the scriptures in a moment. But the International Critical Commentary also says that that power is a collective noun. So these shooters were actually hearing voices, and there are plenty of voices out there to talk to them if they're willing to listen. You do have to resist the devil, but if you just give your mind over to him or to a kind of an emotional rage, or just make your mind blank or get into an hypnotic trance or something like that, well, then you're really in trouble. But this shooter said he was led to do it by radio waves. In other words, Satan was broadcasting to him. And he even used the word radio waves. There's certain pressure there on his evil thinking, his bad attitude, his hate. And it got worse and it intensified and got worse and worse and worse. They can and they do, that is, the demons and Satan, apply pressure. They have all kinds of power. And that's why people hear voices and, as this man said, are led to do it by radio waves or Satan broadcasting, frankly. That's what Mr. Armstrong was talking about. Revelation 12 in verse 3, you can see where this Satan is the leader of this great red dragon is over the seven heads and ten horns. In other words, it leads the Holy Roman Empire. Verse 4, "And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth." Now this is where Satan rose up to rebel against God and to try to kick God off his throne. That's the kind of power God created in this being. And it was this war here was a cosmic war right out in the universe. That's where warfare started. And then, of course, Satan was cast down and he introduced it to this world. And we've been warring ever since. Winston Churchill said, "The history of man is the history of war." Well, why should that be with men? Because Satan is the god of this world. And wars are caused by him and evil men who want to follow his philosophy. But that cosmic war was just brought down to this earth, and now we have millions of spirit beings that are doing terrible things today because they know their time is short. And you'll see that right here in a moment. Verse 9, and the great red dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil, and Satan, which deceives the whole world, and he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Now, this is the second time he was cast out. He's cast out in this end time. And we believe we can prove to you almost to the day, and perhaps even to the day when he was cast out. And we'll send you literature that will show you that. Verse 12, therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, and for the devil has come down unto you. He was cast down. He's confined to this earth now. He's come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. Now, that's very good news. And then it goes on to talk about how he immediately persecuted God's own church and turned 95% of God's own people away from God. That shows you the power he has, the power of deception, even deceived God's own church. That's what happened. 95% of God's people. We'll send you our booklet on America Under Attack, which will explain a lot of this to you, and also the booklet Daniel Unlocks the Book of Revelation. But Satan and these demons are now confined to this earth, and they're full of rage and wrath because they know they have but a short time until Jesus Christ returns and stops all the warfare forever. I mean, stops it forever. We won't ever have to worry about Satan and his violent world again. We won't have to think about it. But Satan, you see, is behind warring on this earth. That's why it begins by talking about that Holy Roman Empire with seven heads and 10 horns. That's his main tool to cause war on this earth. A church-state combine that is very deadly. And it all really started out into the universe, and now Satan has brought his number one tool out on this into this world, and they cause a lot of wars. Every time they get power, they go to war, and they're very powerful once again. And those booklets will explain that to you as well. But you can see the origin of all this warfare. See, these people walk according to the course of this world. The course of this world is evil. That's what Ephesians 2 and verse 2 says, according to the prince of the power or powers of the air. He just surcharges that air with his evil spirit and motivates people and motivates that spirit in man to do evil things if they allow themselves to get into negative attitudes or evil attitudes, bitter attitudes. And that's what happens. And it goes on in verse 3. I'll just read that to you in Ephesians 2. Among whom also we all have had our conversation, our conduct in times past, in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. So we've just all been guilty of following Satan's way of life. He's the god of this world, and we worship him. Unless we worship the true God. But look at all this broadcasting that's going on. Satan and the demons are working on these attitudes or these moods or these impulses or these negative feelings. And he can really get people stirred up if they're in a mean attitude or a bitter attitude or even a violent attitude. He can really use them. And that's how he causes wars and riots and the like. Here, there's a report here from the Drudge Report about Rick Santorum, who ran in the last presidential election and did quite well. But he said himself in this February 21, 2012 report, Satan has his sights on the United States of America. He's a Republican of the presidential hopeful back in 2012. He was. Satan is attacking the great institutions of America. Here's a politician that believes that. And I agree with him. And he talks about the great vices of pride and vanity and sensuality as a root to attack all of the strong plants that has so deeply been rooted in the American traditions. He said, this is a spiritual war. Well, our book on the United States and Britain in prophecy will certainly show you that. But you can also read more about this in Isaiah 14, where God actually shows there that first rebellion by Satan the devil. And he says in verse 12, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? And he goes on to say that Lucifer said he was going to exalt his throne above the stars or the angels of God, and that means above God too. I mean, this being has power. He challenged God. He challenged God. And that's something that we need very much to be aware of. You can read that in verses 12 through 14, but he had a throne, and he still has a throne. But he's about to be kicked off it. That's why he's so full of wrath. God is about to take over and bring peace and joy and happiness to this world. But here Satan has one-third of the rebellious angels, or one-third of the angels rebelled, and they were full of bitterness and became that way, and he deceived them and brought them along with him. As they were here on this earth, God was putting them on this earth to prepare them to rule the universe, but they failed. And so he decided he had to recreate himself in man, because only he would not rebel. Only he, the God, could be trusted to rule the universe. Now that's an amazing story and an amazing truth that ought to fill us with hope and joy, because we're almost to the point where Jesus Christ is ready to return to this earth. He has to. Or he says there would be no flesh saved alive if he didn't. Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. See, he's been cast down again. And we can't think that somehow we're immune to all this, his wrath, the wrath of Satan and the power of Satan. I mean, it says in Isaiah that he makes the earth to tremble, and he shakes kingdoms. And yet people scoff at whether or not he even exists. Well, at least they'd better prove that very carefully, because we're headed for some serious trouble, and we need to get close to God to solve our problems.